Oh.
You're listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and back earlier in the year, I had the opportunity to connect with John Mulhall, and John was introduced me to a number of veterans who were walking at the Famine Way from Strokestown, Roscommon, to Dublin, and was just before the other panel walk. We talked about it and we talked to some of the people who participated. And interestingly enough, today we're also talking to earlier in the show, you would have heard from Martha Kelly and Mary Murray. We're just back having walked on the canal from Strokestown to Dublin. So we're featuring a lot this year on that. But that was my introduction to John. But when John then mentioned to me, he was in the process of putting together his first book. And it's about to launch. It launches on September 11th. And it's titled From Terror to Valor. And it's about, as I understand it, it's revolves around his research into Desert Storm and the US Army Rangers, providing much of what he needed to learn for the characters that were going to be in Terror to Valor. And John has was involved and a member of the Defence Forces in Ireland. So the military topics, I guess you could say, it makes some sense. John Taffalchero, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here. Yep.
So
So
I'll try. So first of all, this is your maiden voyage into writing books. What inspired you, first of all, to kind of say, I'm going to write a book?
well, that's a great question. I suppose the biggest thing for me was I was always attached to literary works, reading, writing, journalist for Irish Tech News, and also I'm a coder as well. After the Defence Forces, I was 15 years, 12 of those in management in financial operations in Ireland, and after
A
that, then
fire lighting up.
After that, then my journey took me into engineering. So I retrained as an engineer. Thought about my life to that point, about my short works on Irish Tech News and other places, and I wanted to do a long piece. And one of the, I suppose, the forgotten. I was a former member of the 29th Infantry Battalion, stationed in Monaghan on the border through the Troubles. And one of the, I suppose, the forgotten heroes, so to speak, of the Troubles has been the Irish Defence Forces and their commitment to the security of the Republic of Ireland, all the way across the border. So the 29th, 28th, 27 battalions all did their job without quibble. We all did what we needed to do, and then, the Good Friday Agreement, peace, the peace dividend took hold, and things started to get better. So, as we all headed off quietly into our lives, the thought occurred to me about Desert Storm. Because one of the things I did do around that time was to get in contact with the US Embassy to join the US Marine Corps. And I kind of reconciled the two together. And started to do my work in, believe it or not, 2018. Might be a day late and a dollar short, but let's hope I'll get the story out this time.
Right.
So.
So, John, one day you very rightly point out, there's Ireland as a country, the military is very, very, very low key in
Yes.
comparison to other countries. And I remember back, and it was back in the 70s, going to Spain for the first time on holidays. And you get off the plane and you're greeted into the airport. And here you have these guys in uniform with guns. And it hits you across the face.
Does. Yeah.
Likewise.
It's a cultural shock. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a
Yeah.
cultural shock. And
Yeah.
likewise, when you come to North America, not Canada, but you go down into the US, and you're very aware of cops with guns and that it's a different culture.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So the Irish culture, very many ways, was that I would have to say, we were very conscious, and I was very conscious growing up, of the Irish contribution to peacekeeping, UN peacekeeping.
Yes.
And the other thing I was conscious of was, because I started my career banking, was when the security car truck came up outside the door of the bank, there was a military vehicle front and
Oh
back.
yeah. So there were core duties when I was there. Well, we didn't do them because we were border assigned to the border full time. But the Dublin battalions all would have contributed to the likes of secure core escorts, which would be the cash escort vans. They were subject to being robbed by PIRA, Provisional IRA, and other terror groups as well had their eyes on them. There's a close link between PIRA and organized crime. So the act of villainy to raise funds was deemed within the PIRA movement as being acceptable. So those vans, because of our laws, because of our culture, they required military escorts because, by definition, the only ones who really could do that particular job properly was the military. The Garda and policing side would always be there as well, of course. It would be joint Garda Army. But I suppose the big difference between, let's say, what we did on the border and the likes of Securicorps, transit vans, or Securicorps escorts and cash van escorts and whatnot, those escort duties tend to be very short. They're transactional. So you'll have maybe sometimes, something 3, 6, 12 hours maybe on the road. But being a member of a border battalion is a 24/7 duty. It's a 24/7 commitment. Because one of the things that is in my book and has never really been discussed by battalion members outside of the battalion is the fact that even when you're off duty, you're not really, because there's always somebody looking to spy on you, dip into your secrets, fill you with a couple of pints, get you talking the old Irish way. So counterintelligence was a formidable part of the skill of a border soldier. And back in those days, it was particularly important.
Now, when you say in those days it was particularly important, because as you just said, whether it was somebody trying to elicit or solicit information, it had to be in a very direct way. Technology had not advanced to such a degree where, yes, there were phone tappings, but nothing like where we are today with technology. And I guess where your book and your novel is transitional to some degree, is it in that type of technological transition and the impact of it would be part of the work.
Oh, yes. So I started my research in 2018. I retrained as an engineer, but I'm versed in cyber operations as well. I have enough knowledge accumulated to be able to contextualize it in terms of the who the players, the processes, and how cybercrime has merged with the likes of the SVR. The GRU have been quite active in Russia for quite a while. And many agree that the global digital war has begun. World War III in the digital space has begun in roughly 2012, 2013. My research has also gone into the likes of digital subversion, disinformation, misinformation, and how they merge together. What I used to deal with along with my comrades up in the 29th Battalion, and indeed our comrades in the 27th and the 28th Battalion as well, was more along the lines of, as you say, direct. Human-to-human interaction. So, who may the cutest fox win, so to speak. So, one tends to be quite clever and quite thoughtful when considering one's words in public, in particular. The thoughts of that and the inferences of that, when you think about social media today, when you think about the birth of nefarious forums that organize in private groups and go onto social media with purposeful intent, was something that caught my eye. I've been watching this since about 2012, 2013, and one of the things I did notice was the alignment with the human intelligence and counterintelligence requirements that I used to perform quite routinely when I was on the border. So when one thinks about, disclosing personal information, and one thinks about how we give permission to social media companies to manage our information, the packages, they sell it quite often to legitimate sources. But these activities also give rise to interception. These activities also give rise to the illegitimate use of our data in ways that sometimes, you know, we could understandably never see coming. And this type of information has led to what they call digital subversion. And it's not only social media, there's other sources as well. It can be your browser history, it can be anything they can get their hands on. And if you ever heard of a term called digital scraping or web mm-hmm. scraping, mm-hmm. That's in the, especially in the early days, that was a huge source of data. And if it's managed or reordered to a structured format correctly, it can be used to great extent or to great effectiveness when one has a rhythm and rhyme to what they're doing. And digital subversion has been, and disinformation, of course, is not something new. It's part and parcel of what used to go on in the Cold War. So the KGB, under a chap called Brev, who's a mathematical psychologist, and was able to define a process that would do what has been done today. It was deemed partially effective because the social media wasn't around, Web 2.0 and the internet just wasn't, you know, up to standard for any kind of incorporation or integration. So the KGB thought it as partially effective in the day. But now, of course, you know, with the Arab Spring in 2011, authoritarians looking to find some kind of way to get back and maintain their power bases, they used the very tool that they felt threatened by, which was social media. And of course, everybody thinks about the overthrow of the Mubarak government, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt in 2013. The reality was that was orchestrated by the United Arab Emirates, who figured out, you know, this propaganda or digital subversion 2.0, which is the template for what has been used today by numerous bad actors, both public and indeed private, who remain harder to find to this day. So a lot of that information has fed into my thought process behind laying out a fictional story that is not fact, but it is based on facts as you go through it. There is factual basis to the fictional story being told.
I want to throw in just a total segue, but it's relevant in one way. And this is more to kind of connect something like this to the ordinary punter in the street. You know, people will say my Facebook account has been hacked, and it hasn't been hacked. A clone account has been set up.
Yep.
Why and what's the benefit, or what can a clone account ultimately benefit a bad actor?
So it's a great question. And the ultimate benefit is, the immediate benefit, should I say, is intelligence collection. So they will use their own analysis tools, which are extensive if they're, you know, placed in the right position to interrogate data sets for that social media platform. And with that information, they'll identify individuals who will have either adjacent access to, or will have an importance of some other usable fashion to them, which they will target. They'll target that individual, and they will try to mimic that individual with their friends. And it's the adjacent factor that allows them to infiltrate social groups within social media. So think of a bunch of friends in the pub now on a Friday night. Everybody's there face to face, talking to each other, but the same attraction, the same bond of friendship often exists in the digital world over social media between groups who see eye to eye on different things. There tends to be a social network forming underneath this as trust is established with individuals. And it's that particular basis of trust between one individual and another can be the basis for one individual being targeted because of their access to another. That's the primary motive, in my view, why that has been used. I've seen it, you know, people on my own Facebook account, on my own experience on Facebook, I've seen that happen quite a lot. That tends to be quite popular because of its size. And quite often, if you have somebody who's friends with such and such, and then you send, using their account, you know, an invite or some kind of activity to maybe a friend of a friend. So the other person doesn't know the difference between the two accounts, but they are a strategic worth to this individual. They can, by mistake, invite them into the network, thinking that the individual that was being targeted. That would be a key activity. I've seen it a few times, and it's one that certainly has been poorly policed, in my view. And they all social media companies require you to report these things. And I've reported many. Some are removed, some aren't. And it's a question of I think it's really a question of the opinion of the individual on the far end
Right,
of the right.
because again, when you say in relating to the book, any of these topics, you're dealing with an awful lot of what is unknown, and the challenge you're up against is that your characters have to weave through a web of what is known and unknown, and in many cases filter out as best they can, which
Yes,
can be a
yes,
challenge because you're
yes,
going to
yes.
filter out based on what you know, which may be false.
Yes. And that particular point came up a few times in the book. And it's one of those great lessons in life about being able to firstly understand that, you have something you need to think about, and quite often people just, drift over it when they should be paying attention to it. But when you do pay attention, are you paying attention to the right details? So I won't throw in any spoilers, but there's quite a number of aspects in the book that are presenting, the characters with these junctures where they're like, I think we should do this. I've got a hunch about this. I'm going to run into this really quickly, and I want you to back me up. No, that's not the way it goes. You see,
Right.
did you really ask if that's possible to yourself? I won't throw any spoilers, but it's a little bit more contextualized in the book, where it would make sense to the reader as they go through it. But the real, gotcha is when somebody sits back, scratches their head, and realizes that, hold on a minute, I never thought of that. And it's like panic, and then whoopsie. Time to accept one's error and move on very quickly.
And it's interesting that I have coming up in a week or two a conversation with Patrick Okeja. And Patrick was the founder of Air Ireland, but Patrick has a book coming out, and it is to do with decision making.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the chapters is about bias and how you make decisions based on bias, and bias being that you want a certain outcome before you ever start. So you lead through it, and I guess one of the challenges always in something like your work, and in putting that into print, is to make sure that your characters confront what would be bias and work their way through it.
Yes. That's very, very true. And like in the real world of intelligence, mentoring and leadership is extremely important. So they often merge together, and that camaraderie between, operators working on the team together is often a case where one, simple call out on bias can save, a huge amount of time, or maybe even a life. For the other on the far end, and that personal bias, we always base it on our past decisions. We're always looking, as human beings, we always look to take the shortcut or the heuristic cut to the best outcome based on our past knowledge. And that bias, even in the intelligence world, can be lethal. The big thing about, when I was in the military was, and it was one thing I learned, very, very keenly when I was in Monaghan, was that less is more.
Right.
So, listen, talk less, listen more.
So,
And it same goes, the same can be said for the physical, for the digital world as well, in social media, especially when you have somebody that jumps on a thread that's inflammatory and outrageous, and you're thinking to yourself, you're about to explode. Like, how could you? How dare you? That's an outrage. You want to just throw it all at them. But look, just like in Monaghan, less is more. You gotta talk less and listen more.
I won't quite say the 15-second elevator pitch, but give me maybe the 30 to 45-second summary elevator pitch of From Terror to Valor, Echoes and Shadows. What's
Sure.
the
Sure.
inside flap?
The inside flap. So this is about Jack DeBose's story in the War on Terror. He was in the U.S. Army Rangers in Desert Storm, injured and left. He retrained as an engineer, and as he's working his way back into civilian life in a real and meaningful way, he got drawn into the murky world of intelligence and counterintelligence, where he and his former team leader in the Rangers, Mike Valensky, were drawn on to the same team, but also drawn into a much larger plot that is maybe or maybe not behind the War on Terror and what it really stood for. So there's a lot of echoes and shadows within the world that they had to deal with, and they often presented themselves as threats, sometimes benign, sometimes malevolent. But their challenge as they made their way through the years was to filter out, you know, what is and what is not. It takes them through to a big showdown towards near the end that seemed to be, you know, lethal, the whole nine yards of action and valor. But yet at the end of it all, you know, is it really resolved? You know, is there another chapter, another novel to go? You know, is this the end? So that's up to the reader to decide.
Right.
But and certainly in the real world, it's not.
Is John Mulhall making any appearances in this in any form, one or another?
Well, you know, I was at a writers' conference last year, and I was asked a similar question when I was talking about my book. And I told him no, this is pure fiction. And an author smiled back at me and said, well, you know, a good author always puts a little or maybe more than a little of himself into the book. So, you know, if you say it's fiction, I believe you. Judging by the grin, I didn't think she did.
So, John, available 11th of September. Is there a reason?
Yes.
I imagine there's a reason you picked the 11th of September.
Oh, there was, yes. It's 9/11. It's a story told after 9/11. There's a lot of movies, a lot of books about 9/11 out there. My own cousins were involved in 9/11 as well. They're New Yorkers. And I remember being in New York in 2004. I was in 2004. And I was standing, one of my now deceased cousins was a bar owner. And we're in the top floor of his bar right beside Ground Zero. And he was telling me the story of what he did. And, you know, I was awestruck. I didn't know what to say to him. But the suffering of New Yorkers on that day is something that, you know, they handle so valiantly. It needs to be remembered. And I think this publication on September the 11th, telling the story after that, albeit a fiction story, is something that is fitting, given the topic and given the characters. Because for Jack DeBose, should I say, as a protagonist, there's also an antagonist, Saad al-Sahoni, who had all the hallmarks of one particular individual. And there'll be a few other familiar names in there. But since it's all fiction, they can't sue me from next life for this one.
And where will it be available?
Oh, I'm going wide, as authors would say, with distribution. So it's on Amazon and also Kindle, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, all digital stores, of course. And there's a whole host of stores. Do we have a comment section where I can throw some links for people?
No,
to
I pure audio.
Pure audio. So author, if you go to authormulhall.com, AUTHORMULHALL.com, you can find the book there. And there's also a buy link underneath the description. So it can be found there. It can be found on a number of different stores. To be honest, you know, you could go to Books 2, that's Books, BOOKS, 2, as in the number 2, and then read, and then / from terror, and then to the number valor. You'll get the universal link, which will bring you through to your favorite bookstore. So instead of kind of tracing around them all, you can go from there and be interested into it.
And I did mention we're pure audio here, so I understand you're working on an audio version also.
That's produced. Yes. So I was talking to a number of folks online, and they were like, audiobook, I'm an audio learner. So, can't do the paperback or the ebook. So, I jumped on it last minute. About 6 weeks of marketing was dropped in order to do the audiobook version. And it is available on Google Play right now.
Right.
It's also available right now on Barnes and Noble as well. And it'll be coming out in about 4 to 6 others. It's coming in a little cheaper than normal because I tried out digital narration to see how it would work out. And I have to say, there's going to be a healthy business for authors into the near future. But I did quite a lot of jerry-rigging, being a guy that knows how to do less with more.
Right,
Or
right.
do more with less, maybe.
So you've
to get it done.
you're the narrator also.
No, it's they
No.
didn't give me a choice. There's a couple of characters that were very colorful in the book. One of them was Jimbo. He's a dub, former Army Ranger and former J2 intelligence. There's another character there was Abbas al-Siri, a former al-Sheikh of Libyan Special Forces, but both intelligence private intelligence operatives working for the CIA, and both of them are quite the characters. But they're the biggest variances from what I intended in terms of characters lie with those two, but the rest of them are pretty realistic. But to get the Irish humour across using accents that are not Irish, so one is German and the other one is, I'm not sure what the other one is actually, but they were supposed to be kind of Libyan Irish mixed in, so think Carlo, Pizza Carlo coming from Libya, and what do you get? You get that kind of deep, broad Carlo accent, and all the push and shove that you find from Libyans as well.
You
So
might,
there's.
you might not get sued for a work of fiction, but you might get someone from Carlo soon,
Oh yeah. They might be coming up with a baton or two as well, but it's all good. I'm still a good runner, as you can see here with my Wile E. Coyote T-shirt.
Follow me up to Carlo.
Follow me to Carlo. So.
John Mulhall, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you. Again, the website is Author Mulhall. That's AUTHOR Mulhall, MULHALL .com. And you'll get links there that bring you through to where you can get your hands on the book. John, it's been a real pleasure and fun having a chat.
Thanks, Austin. You too. Fair play.